So let's get started. I'm Lorette Farris, host at Capital Academy, and on this segment, I'd like to welcome Glenn Garnes. Welcome, Glenn, thank you so much for joining me today on Capital Academy.
It's my pleasure to be here with you.
Absolutely. We do a lot together, and so I am so happy that you're able to join me in this particular endeavor, because on today's topic, we're going to talk about a couple of things that you and I have talked about previously. And if you'll give me 1 second, I wanted to make sure that the information that we're talking about, you recently joined me in an accelerated training program, and we did a lot of conversation relative to early stage and startup companies raising capital and the security rules and regulations centered around that. So today we're gonna, you know, talk about some of that information to bring it out to the audience, and specifically the SEC intrastate regulations that allow companies to raise $5 million. But we're also gonna talk about some sponsor moments and some questions that we've received from entrepreneurs. Before we go into any of that,
Well, first of all, I have to say that the course that you put us through was more like a degree program. I felt like it was just absolutely chock full of value. And I'm glad that you asked me to come in and talk with you today about some of the things that we learned, because it was incredible.
Right.
It was from our relationship that I am a licensed attorney. I have to distinguish between practicing and licensed,
right,
because
right.
I still got the paper, but I don't go down to the courthouse very frequently.
Uh-huh.
So I'm a licensed attorney. I spent a lot of time representing business owners in my law practice. And frankly, I found that my spirit of entrepreneurship was more stronger than my desire to practice law long term. So that was one of several reasons that I left the practice of law to pursue my own business ventures.
We're happy to have you on this side.
Yes, indeed.
But I've also experienced the other side. So whichever way you want to work with the entrepreneur.
Just can't turn it off some days. So Village Connector, in a lot of ways, I like to think it's the real, for me at least, it's the realization of a fusion between two of my passions. One is personal development. The other is technology.
Right.
So the internet being the ultimate technology, it's a very dynamic environment. Video is the hot thing right now. Mm-hmm. We created an internet television radio show, or a radio network, to deliver personal development content. So it kind of fits both of my requirements for maintaining my attention.
So I'm going to divulge just a little more and say thank you so much, because where we are in recording this segment is the space that you have developed for entrepreneurs like me to be able to put this content together. So I thank you.
Yeah, so this is a pretty good idea, right?
This is absolutely a phenomenal idea. So thank you. And so let's dig in a little bit to what the topic is of today. And on Capital Academy, not only do I want to make sure that we are bringing about information for this ecosystem, but we also want to make this a platform where we can bring information about entrepreneurs that are doing things on this platform. Today's segment, both are being accomplished in this one piece, because while it's not an entrepreneurial endeavor, the SEC put out a press release. The SEC, Securities and Exchange Commission, put out this press release so that entrepreneurs knew that they stepped into this space. And what is this space? Entrepreneurs have the opportunity to raise up to $5 million by doing a particular process that the SEC has now made available through intrastate offerings, so doing them through the state. So companies that want to raise up to $5 million working through the states to make that happen now have the opportunity to do that. Why is that huge? It's huge because that same regulation used to only allow companies to raise $1 million. So I know a lot of this sounds Greek when I'm speaking to an audience that hasn't gone through my training program, but since you have, In learning about the various options that are now available for entrepreneurs to raise capital, can you speak to that? Is there something that resonates for you in understanding how that works that you might be able to share with other entrepreneurs that are not as familiar with the options?
Yeah, sure. And that's where there was so much value in your course, because we had literally an immersion in a variety of different ways that people can fund the startup or the growth of, you know, the expansion of a business that never would have dawned on me if I hadn't had, and I'm an attorney. I mean, I do understand business. That never would have dawned on me if I hadn't had an opportunity to sit down and be taken step by step by the hand through all the different options that are available, and then being able to compare them and weigh them. Right. And that's really where the horsepower was in the process that you took us through. Because we actually are looking at doing a two-stage mm-hmm. equity raise. Mm-hmm. One of them will be possibly using the 504 offering mm-hmm. To raise the $5 million right. to build out some bigger studios, some nicer we want right. to buy a building and do all that kind of stuff. Uh-huh. And then, of course, we have a preliminary raise that we'll probably end up doing in the form of a standard or traditional angel investment. Mm-hmm. But being able to understand the difference between those right. two things, what each of those requires, who can be involved in them, what each of the audiences for the offering would be looking for in terms of documenting, what you're doing. All of that was amazingly well organized and clarified through the accelerator program. Mm-hmm. And so I found that when I walked out of each session, I had to stop and think and write down even more notes as I started right. thinking, you delivered the value in the accelerator program, but then I had to walk out and think about, okay, how does that apply to my business? Right. And based on what my goals are, what we're trying to accomplish for Village Connector Media, right. where does this show up in, you know, what we're trying to accomplish? Mm-hmm. But you made it very easy to visualize yourself stepping into one of those offerings or multiple offerings right. based on what you're trying to accomplish.
So that's great, and you know, that's exactly my focus. One of iBoss's taglines is know your options, right? You can accomplish plenty when you know what options are available for you. You're limited when you don't know what options are there. And that is what I do want to make sure that people are understanding, that there are a myriad of ways to get to capital, but now what is the actual steps? What are the processes within that? And again, for today, I love the fact that the SEC has made these provisions, that they're pushing the information out there. But what I also know coming from the industry is there are so many entrepreneurs that need the capital, are eligible to utilize these processes, but they don't know that the options are available.
Well, you know, the big challenge that I see in so many industries where the government has a program that's designed to benefit somebody is that it's not always easy to get the details, mm-hmm. which is why there always seems to be a market for someone to educate people. I mean, we see that everywhere from raising capital, as you handle, the student loans and right. qualifying for, you know, school loans and grants and things of that nature. Mm-hmm. It's always a good idea to get the details from someone who has studied, who has lived it. I mean, you come from Wall Street. I mean, you know mm-hmm. the territory. Mm-hmm. So having someone take you by the hand the way that you did, knowing that this isn't just something that you read the regulations you're going to try to decipher for us. You live these things, mm-hmm. That really made a big difference for me.
Yeah, no, I appreciate that. And the other side of what I did want to bring out is there are actually some statistics. Now, this is a little off from the Reg D's, but there are some statistics on one of the other provisions that was made available earlier in the year from the SEC, and that's called the Regulation A. So the Reg A, as we talked about, is the provision that allows you to raise up to a maximum of $50 million.
We'll eventually take advantage of that one.
And in that, you're doing it where it's considered a public offering. And I won't go into all those details because in this short time, I don't. But I just wanted to bring out a couple of the statistics that speak to these regulations are starting to take. And real companies are raising real capital that previously was out of reach to them. So this is a report that was done by the end of last year, though it only went through the third quarter of last year. 147 of these Reg A offerings were done, of which 81 of them were qualified. So that's gobbledygook language. But the point is 81 companies got through the regulatory process in order to use this regulation to raise up to a maximum of $50 million, right? It took them about 121 days on average to get through the qualification process. So about a year in order to get qualified to do this, right? 17% of them used broker-dealers.
Wow.
That means, what's the reverse? 83% of them did it directly themselves.
That's like the difference between going to a publisher to publish your book and being self-published.
Exactly.
The market has shifted to being self-published.
Exactly. Think about that. Those are companies who are raising up to $50 million directly themselves because the power of what these regulations gave them an opportunity to do. 87% were equity and 13% were debt. So in other words, you can do equity, you can do debt, or a combination of the above. And I guess the last thing I wanted to make sure, 50% of all issuers are incorporated in Delaware, Nevada, or located in California, Texas, Florida, or the D.C. area.
Wow.
Okay. So
I wouldn't have thought D.C. would have been included in that, but that's an interesting statistic.
But you know what's happening is this area is becoming a hub for early stage startup companies. There is a lot of activity that's happening. Yes, we're used to California has always been huge, right?
Silicon Valley, Texas, especially tech startups.
Exactly. Texas. And you think New York, but New York isn't always on that long list, right? That may be where the financial firms are, but it's not necessarily where that
the ones capital, raising the capital
that's
are.
That's exactly right. So I just wanted to make sure that I brought that information out in this segment. And
so the accelerator education continues.
The accelerator information continues. And that's what I want Capital Academy to be all about, right? I want people to be able to go to our channel and watch information that makes sense for them. Any 24/7, go hear some information you want to hear. And at this point, I'm going to do that commercial moment where you too could have a sponsor moment on Capital Academy Recap at this point. But now we're going to have a lot of fun. On Capital Academy, we ask entrepreneurs to send us some questions and comments. And I asked them to do that because I knew I would have brilliant minds on with me, like Glenn Garz. And so I'm going to start playing a couple of the questions so that we can talk about them.
Sure.
So let's see what we have first. As soon as I could click the button the right way.
Hi, my name's Chris Nichols with the Card Caddy at thecardcaddy.com. I have a question about raising funds for a consumer product company. Most of the venture capitalists and angel investors that I have come across have been more interested in investing in tech companies or medical technology companies and less interested in consumer products like my company. Do you have any strategies for approaching investors that may not be as interested in consumer products? Or are there any resources of investors out there that specifically focus on investing in consumer product companies? Thanks.
That's a great question.
That's a great question. And a lot of people want to know that. I'm going to, since you're an expert, you came through that accelerator program. You have any thoughts along that line, Blake?
Yeah, I think that what I would tell Chris is that it's not so much a matter of all the angels or all the investors are looking for tech. That might be a big part of where money's going to, but you have to find the investors that have a so-called appetite for that type of opportunity. And I think that if I was an angel investor, or if I was an investor at any level, I would want to know some answers to questions related to what, you know, the opportunity is with that product. Certainly, you got to be able to articulate very clearly and effectively what it costs you to produce the product relative to what you're retailing it for, how you plan on distributing the product. Are you going to do it direct, or are you going to do it through channel partners? Because that obviously affects profitability, but it also affects scalability as well. So if you're going to interest an investor in a consumer product, you certainly should have somebody who has tried the product so that you can get some anecdotal testimonials and reviews so that they see that there's a real market for the product. Because I as an investor, if I was in an investor's shoes, I don't think I would shy away from a consumer product because, cell phones are consumer products. I don't think there's anyone on the planet that doesn't have at least one, you know.
Exactly.
But my point is that I don't think I would shy away from a product-based opportunity as long as there was a market for the product.
Yeah. And just like you're saying, you do have to determine your market. No different than when you're selling your product or service, you got to figure out your market. When you're selling interest in your company, i.e. looking for investors, you got to find where those investors are. But going back to the subject matter we were just talking about, that is one thing I would say to Chris. I don't know what his product or service is, how broad-based the audience is for it, but guess what? When you look at these various opportunities to raise capital directly yourself, all of a sudden you put together a marketing program where you get to reach out to the type of audience that makes sense for whatever that product or service is. What do I mean by that? So a small, for instance, there's a company that needed to raise capital that was a wine and cheese restaurant. What do? You walk in the restaurant, they hand you a menu. They have wine on the menu. They have wine, they have cheese, and they have stock.
Okay. Take your pick.
Exactly. There's a company, I think it's in Maine, that they, it's a pickle farm. They sell pickles. What did they do? They put together an offering and they sold stock in that company to area residents. So now all of a sudden the community became owners in that pickle farm. So depending upon the product or service that you're selling, what is the audience for the product or service? They could be a natural extension of who might be interested in buying an interest in the business.
That's a great point. And especially if you think about perk-based crowdfunding as well. That's a great way for you to test the market with the product because you're getting the money. You're basically getting prepaid orders when you do a crowdfunding campaign and someone's putting the money up basically for you to order your first round of inventory. Mm-hmm. But then those same people, if they enjoy the product enough, if you're doing a 504 offering, they could then become shareholders in the very product that that they tested by taking a chance on.
That's exactly right. So again, not knowing Chris's product or service and knowing your options, I'd need to understand what it is to see if maybe there is one of these new market ways for him to get to the capital that he needs. So Chris, I hope when you listen to this that those answers might mean something to you. And if not, then you give me a call or send in another question and give us a chance to try it again. So let's see if we can get to another question, Glenn. Again, as soon as I learn how to click the button, there we go.
Hello, my name is King of King Connections and Conscious Community Baltimore, as well as the Conscious Real Estate Investors Roundtable. My question is related to, what is the minimum amount of money that you recommend that a business that's a startup has allocated for business expenses on a monthly basis to invest in their business, such as either marketing or paying for coaching or paying for training, what is the minimum amount that you suggest that a business should have? Thank you.
Any thoughts on that one, Glenn?
Yeah.
Hello, my name is King of King Connections.
Yeah, I think that, and that's, these folks are asking some good questions because yeah. It's, you know, I hear that a lot. Like, how much of my budget should be allocated to marketing my company, especially now that I'm in the marketing space? Right. But his question was broader than that. It was business expenses generally. And he talked about business coaching and mentoring and stuff like that as well. So good for him, because a lot of people don't even have that as a line item.
Exactly.
So my answer is as much as is necessary to get the job done, because you know, some marketing professionals tell you that you should rule of thumb should be 10% of your gross should be allocated towards marketing. I don't know that there's any meaningful way to put a minimum on. There is no minimum. One of my marketing mentors told me that I should invest in myself at the level at which I expect results. And so for me, I expect big results. So I put a lot of time and effort in my coaches. You know, I've got, you're my business coach. I have a marketing coach. I have a life coach. And, you know, I don't even want to talk about how much they cost, but they're worth it. Right. Because the return on investment that I get from having them counseling me and mentoring me is priceless.
Right.
So, King, I'm not sure I could say that there is a so-called minimum. I would tell you that you should be willing to invest what it takes based on whether the value is there for what you're getting.
Mm-hmm. So you're asking that question of a Wall Street person. So the issue that an investor, and I speak from an investor mindset, right? As soon as they heard the coach question, that's a problem, right? In the world that I'm in, i.e. working with entrepreneurs, I think it's perfect, because you get used to working with early stage small businesses that, like you said from the beginning, they don't even think about that. So I'm saying all this to say it depends on how you're capitalizing your firm for what the capital behind your firm is going to believe is a valid expectation or not. If you're working with your own funds, totally you figure out what you can afford that's going to make sense for what you do. But if you're working with someone else's money, there are certain line items that they're not going to feel is appropriate, and you're going to have to.
I actually think that's two questions though, Lorette, because you know it's one thing for you to invest the money in what you know will advance you. Mm-hmm. It's another thing for you to be allocating it to something that the investors believe will advance you.
And that's exactly right.
Because if you could show them how equity in the company mm-hmm. increased by 100% mm-hmm. because of the coach mm-hmm. you hired, that would not be a line item they'd be objecting to.
Yeah. The only issue is he started from as a startup company.
Yes, absolutely.
Right. So as a startup company, you know, you're going to run. But outside of that, I agree with you. I don't know that I could put a percentage on how much it should be. I think that's a matter of truly looking at your bottom line. Can you afford it?
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, and to your point, can you afford not to?
Right.
So I think some of that is subjective.
Yes, absolutely. But that was a great question, though, and it's good to see somebody thinking about that, because so many of these things end up being just afterthoughts, like, oh, maybe I'll get a coach.
Yeah. Or on the other side, they just do it not even thinking about the bottom line, the worth personally or the worth to the business.
And I think it's legitimate to ask a business coach or a marketing coach or a life coach mm-hmm. what tangibly you can expect to be the return on investment. What am I going to, what is the
Extended
result I'm
outcome.
Going to realize that's going to justify the investment?
Yeah. Absolutely. Oh, you know what? Maybe I want to change some of my answers so that, you know, as a coach.
Hey, listen, you know, you occupy a slightly different space than most coaches, because investors understand that you're the reason they got capitalized in the first place.
Yeah.
Exactly.
So, Glenn, thank you so much.